Hi, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini with Go See Talk, and our guest today is composer Guillaume Roussel. He has done the music to the Disney Plus remake or adaptation of Black Beauty, which premiered on November 27. Guillaume, we are excited to have you on the show. How have you been these past couple weeks?
Well, thank you for inviting me and having me. Thank you. The last weeks have been very busy for me, and with the release and some other projects I'm working on, it's been a great end of the year, I have to say, despite the overall situation, obviously.
Excellent. I guess many people can just say they're blessed to be busy and so lucky to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah, no, it's been a quite a roller coaster this year, but thing is that I'm still working with a few French collaborators, like directors, producers, and what happened is like we saw a lot of project being put on hold here in America, and I have a lot of friends, directors, American directors that are still waiting for their projects to get a green light. Because of those COVID restrictions, but in France, I guess it's because the productions, the sets are smaller than here. You know, budgets are usually a bit smaller in France. So thanks to that, we got a lot of projects that have been resuming in France, and that's why I got really busy with more French projects the last couple of months.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Well, Black Beauty is directed by Amy Avis, who also wrote the screenplay and edited it. So she had quite a lot of control. How did you get on board, and what are some of your first discussions with Ashley?
My friend Jeremy Bolt, which is one of the producers of the movie, I'm a friend with him, and we did work on a movie in the past. He introduced me to Ashley because he thought that we could have a good connection. And he was right, because we did our first meeting probably, I would say, 3 months before she started shooting. And we exchanged ideas. We just wanted to know each other. And it really clicked right away. She's a great person, very talented. And she put a lot of work on that script, which I thought was really good. And as you said, she's not only a director, but also the editor. And that was really a very interesting situation for me, because I got to be really close to Ashley. Nobody else were really working with her for those entire month of editing. Obviously, sometimes she would have to show some of the dailies, the footages of some early cuts of scenes. But like for a long period of time, she was only working all alone, and having me working with her, sending her music, exchanging ideas on the cut. I thought I was very a lot of privilege to be that close to a director so early on in the process, and did that not only was a great human experience, but also like professionally, I mean music wise it allowed me to go really deep in her vision, in the world of the movie, really early on, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a really grateful experience, I have to say.
Well, you know, I've heard a lot of composers say that they came in at the last minute, or they it was a rescue job, but it's great to know that you had the opportunity to see things before they started to shoot. There were some really what I liked, some great imagery, great messages. Was there one cue or one theme specifically that helped kick off your palette, or you know, set the tone for you?
Yes, definitely there were. So I did compose a bunch of themes and different cues early on while she was filming, but I could feel like there was no like response from Ashley that was like obvious, that's the theme. And then I decided to go back to something more simple. And I just wanted to try doing things just with a piano sound, with no arrangement or orchestration whatsoever, just a pure, you know, piano melody. And that's when she started to respond, and that's where we found our theme quite early on, I'd say, like just before she ended up finishing the shooting. And it's all thanks to that moment where I really simplified everything, and we like trying to focus on the just one melody, and with no, you know, how do you say, no artificial wrapping up. So yeah, that's the cue, I think, that was important.
Yeah, if I remember right, the movie opens with some very tender piano, and there's also kind of an important scene where Joe first approaches Beauty, and they walk towards each other, and you repeat or you expand upon that simple motif. You know, I always wonder, do composers latch on to something maybe to try to match the steps of the horse or the character? Did the theme, did your simple motif have anything to do with that? Or
it could have been at some point, but the there's something very special about that scene you're mentioning, which is what we call the first contact scene, which I think it was the first cue I composed to picture. But then we ended up having so many different versions of the cut, so many small revisions that will kind of change the original composition I made, that it became something that kind of, this is interesting, I think, that, I mean, as far as like the synchronization to picture, it became something more that Ashley kind of envisioned. She took the piece, and while she was doing those changes in the editing, my initial synchronization points, as we call them, changed. She moved this one there, and it became something different. And I have to say that this particular piece is more of the work of Ashley in terms of editing and taking the music and making it moving around than myself. I just made the melody, but she really moved around the music and make it her own. And I thought that was very interesting to watch.
Well, I think it spoke to both the characters, and, you know, it brought them both to the same page, because they were, I guess what brought them together was their experiences and their spirits. But the movie, as simple as that motif was and how powerful it was, it seems like you had a lot of different themes and palettes as the story progressed. You know, Beauty went from one stable to the other, to a city. I mean, and you opened it up to different instruments. Can you describe what went into selecting certain instruments?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you are totally right that we had the opportunity to explore the different sounds, because the script and the story was allowing me to go in different places where we needed the music to kind of have a different sound. So the most challenging part was Brunswick, which is the first part of almost half the movie, and which is countryside. So mainly we tried to have some kind of Native American or American folkloric sound, if I may. So we chose the dulcimer as something that would be different to the guitar, more folkloric, if you wish. And so that's probably was the main instrument for that part of the movie. Obviously, this first part, you have to layer those sounds with Joe's sound, the girl, and Beauty sounds. She I think the main work for me was to find sounds for Beauty. But going back to what you were asking for, then when Beauty goes to that very rich family, that's where I've been able to kind of work more on the style of the music rather than the sound. So we went for something more classical sounding that has more references to very, very classical pieces of music. So it was more of a stylistic approach there. And then when Beauty goes to that rescue job that is in the mountain, I try to embrace more of the organic kind of vibe, you know, going back to nature, wildness, and having some percussion sounds and sometimes wind, native instrument sounds to refer to the wildness of nature, roughness of nature. And then New York, I went back to something more neutral because we were going to go back to Joe right away. So it seemed to me that at this point of the movie, which is almost at the end of the movie, we didn't want it to bring too many different sounds and we still wanted to have something cohesive. So it's more or less what we have been looking into in terms of sounds.
What I think I picked up on the most and I enjoyed the most is those folkloric type instruments. I almost got this feeling that it was a cross between, at times, it was a cross between, say, guitars and the Dark Crystal. It just felt this sort of otherworldly, organic, but still there was a lot of warmth to it. And that was interestingly juxtaposed to maybe the coldness and classical elements of Urschel Stables.
The Urschel, yeah. Uh-huh.
So it was a very good juxtaposition. Another thing that struck me is I let my daughter watch it, and it was PG, so I had to adjust the settings of the Disney Plus. Uh-huh. And it's funny because you watch the movie and it's almost made for two different audiences simultaneously. I thought if it wasn't for Kate Winslet's narration, it'd be a tween or an adolescent movie. And with the narration, it takes it almost into the G territory.
Sure.
Did you have any discussions with Ashley about how heavy to lean one way or the other based on these two different shifts?
Not really, because it's always frightening, I think, especially for our director to start thinking about one specific audience, because it's really hard to give away and to let down a certain type of audience while if you conscientiously working from one or trying to make some kind of a conception of who you're talking to, I think it becomes kind of frightening. And I quite understood this, and that's why I feel like Ashley didn't want to talk too much about those things. But it's an interesting a question that you're asking, because what I always really liked about Ashley's point of view and Ashley's approach to that project is that she's an adult, and that's what I like so much about her, is like she value and her child eyes, even still now, you know, she still have something very candid and very fresh. Like I think she embraces all the stuff she loved so much when she was a kid, and in that regard we kind of are very much the same, you know. Sometimes I caught myself watching a movie and crying, or you know, sometimes I feel like I'm still a child many times. I know it could sound naive to say that, but I really think that there is a big part of me that is still a child. And I'm sure my close friend will confirm that. I'm pretty sure. But like my point is like, Ashley is the same. And maybe to answer your question, that's why this movie can speak both to children and adults. I'm just saying that, you know, because you made me think about this. It's quite interesting, and I feel like this is what Ashley is doing without maybe not noticing it. It's like she can talk to both younger audiences and older ones, and that would still be a solid story, I think, you know. And that's what I really liked about this, and I like to think that I'm the same.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about the movie is Joe's connection to a horse. You know, they both kind of cared for each other and looked after each other. I don't know anything about horses, so I don't know what a strike horse is. And did you have to do any research to kind of get into the equine world? And have you ever had a bond with an animal as close as Beauty and Joe has had?
Well, I have to say, no. It's I haven't grew up in a family where it happens that we had pets around or like horses or whatever. So I really grew up without any animal around me. And to me, even if I have a big respect to animal, those for me, any animal is like a big mystery and something that I really don't understand. So to me, scoring beauty's emotion was a very interesting challenge. But at the same time, it wasn't a problem. I didn't see that as a problem for me because at the end of the day, we as a human audience, we want to be, connected to the horse. So I feel like I was more entitled to do such a thing as a human, maybe more than someone who knows more too much about maybe horses. I mean, to me, it's easier for me to try to transcribe it in a human language for humans than someone that is already somewhere else, if you know what I mean. It's quite confusing what I'm saying, but
I pick it up exactly. I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, the movie's beautifully shot. I think some of the most impacting scenes that work well and even better with your music are a lot of the scenes on the beach with the water. I was captivated. So did you ever find yourself in scoring the picture? You just staring at the screen and then 2 minutes later snapping out of it and going, wait, I'm supposed to be doing something here.
Well, it's beyond that in that movie, I have to say, because, and especially on that last scene when we see Beauty and riding on the beach. At this point, there is some image of her with Joe, but there is some images of Beauty alone on the beach.
Oh yeah,
that's when it's the end of the movie and she's getting old and she's talking about her mother and really to me this scene became something very special because I lost my mother like 5 years ago and this movie is a lot about the relationship with the mother and the way it's shot by Ashley. It has that very pure, authentic vibe that really, really strike me every time I watch it. And I've said that this last scene, when I watched that last scene, I was crying. And it has been really inspiring, you know, because that's what drives me whenever I'm working on a movie is the emotion. And this last scene is so much emotion. To me, that was such a great moment to be able to score.
Well, I think you did a tremendous job, and I'm glad that you get that emotional impact out of it, because in turn, like you said, it affects your workload and your delivery, and ultimately gives a better output to your musical score. And please don't worry about crying. I cry at the end of Back to Future, so I think...
Yeah. We're on the same page, Daniel.
Well, how many times generally... and I understand it may change from project to project, but how many times do you have to watch something, see something before you finally get one, a feel that the cue is working, and then two, that you've written enough music for it?
I'm afraid the feeling to know you've been writing enough music never really happens, because you can always kind of doubt that maybe there is something else that you could have done. So I very rarely, you get that feeling where that's it, you know, as far as I am concerned. And this scene that we just talked about, like the last one, is probably one of those scenes where I really thought that that's it. The music is there and that's, you sometimes kind of enjoy to watch the movie with your music and you almost like forgotten you did compose it and you are enjoying it as an audience would do. But, it's a hard question because sometimes you just first thing you're gonna play on the piano, looking at the scene, is gonna be something that really matches and really work well. And sometimes you just do a break, having tried many, many times. Then you go walk, you go take your car to drive, and suddenly, exactly when you are off in your mind, this is where you find the idea, which doesn't make sense. But you know, it's a mystery in a way. I wish I could know. But I have to say that many of my ideas, the one I like at least, come when I'm like driving or walking, or when my mind is like wandering around and not really focusing on something, I don't know. I have to go and see a shrink and try to explain that.
Well, I guess that's the plight of the working musician. I guess if it were easy, everyone would do it. And it's totally not the case. You've worked with some big names, Mick G, Luc Besson. You've done this great work for the Happy TV show. Does one project or an idea spur something to another project you're working on, or can you silo them and keep them separate?
What do you mean exactly? I'm not sure I understood this one.
For instance, you might be working on a cue in a movie and it may not work, but you may store it and say, well, I think this would work great in a TV show. Could you adapt something that maybe wasn't right for a picture and then just bring it over here? Or how do you,
You mean like reusing stuff that was not used in a previous project and bringing back, changing it to another project? That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. It could happen because accidents are always something that I'm interested in. Like, for example, I always remember that moment where I was working with Hans on the Hans Zimmer on the movie, and he asked me to write a piece of music without picture, and I put a lot of effort and energy in writing that piece, and then toward the end of the process of the movie, we had a score to picture many other scenes, and we didn't have used that one theme. And he said, but what about using this theme here? And at first I was like super surprised, like, oh, I would have never thought about this. And then it ended up being something that was working really good in the movie. And I like those accidents really. And sometimes I do reuse some of the stuff that wasn't used on the project, even though I tend to like that moment where from scratch you're kind of building something. And I would say that I wouldn't naturally go back to whatever I've already done from previous projects, but if it happens, then I quite like the accident that it brings.
Okay. I asked that because I find myself doing that sometimes. I work in architecture, and sometimes maybe a design for a bar or a hotel lobby or a guest room, as much as we want, just doesn't work, you know, once you get past a certain phase. And then we go, well, it's a good idea. And then when you find a project a year later, 10 years later, and you pull it out and boom, it works. So
it's true. Again, I think, and also when people are involved and you have feedback from the outside world, you know, that's where things can get interesting, and like people can tell you, hey, what about this thing? And so you are thinking, oh, but we could try, maybe let me see if I have something like this. And then that's where you end up using something that you wouldn't have thought about like initially. But yeah, you're right. It's a good example.
There's one scene in the movie where it takes place in Central Park. I'm guessing it's around Christmas time because there's a Christmas tune. I think it's Silent Night. Mm-hmm. Were you asked to interpret that? Was that part of your score? Was that okay?
Yeah. It was not too much work because I didn't change too much element of the melody or the harmony. It was just a very simple atmospheric version of Silent Night with a pad, like a synth pad, and a vocal on top of it. So it was very, very simple. I wouldn't say that's what took most of my time on the project. It was pretty, was a small thing.
Okay. Well, I liked it because it was like a version I'd never heard before, and it seemed like it was so in tune with the story and the setting. I thought it might have been your handiwork. So here's a golf clap to you, Guillaume.
Thank you. But to just give credit to Ashley again, that was her idea to have that very airy version of Silent Hill, and I was more of an executant there. Is it an English word?
Existent?
No, I was executing the idea.
Oh, okay, executing. Yes.
Yeah.
Facilitating.
Yes, exactly.
Well, great. Were there any elements of Black Beauty that kind of put you out of your comfort zone and you, you know, stretched some muscles or got a different experience you had not been used to?
Well, that was the first time I think that I was doing a drama slash family movie. So to me, the challenge was more to find the right tone to be, and furthermore, being a Disney movie, you know, was hard to really find my way because you have all those references from the all those movies from Disney. We're talking about like score that are like real, like orchestrated, like full orchestrated and classic scores. So, you know, try to find a balance between doing something old fashioned, because we always, Ashley and I liked, you know, those references as well, and something more modern, but we didn't want it to be too modern because we wanted to do something timeless in a way. So I think that was the big challenge that I was facing for the first time. Not to mention that just working on a Disney movie was putting me in a lot of, you know, pressure and stress, which I haven't faced that much before, as the main composer at least. So, yeah.
Well, do you think that, you know, granted there's a lineage, a heritage, a prestige of Disney, but is that all maybe in your head? I mean, because a movie is a movie, even though, like you said, it is more of a drama. Do you think that might have been more perceived?
It's totally in your head. You're right. I mean, it's just because I grew up with that, you know, fascinated by all those movies from Disney. To me, it's like, it's a sanctuary in a way, you know, and for me, like being able to kind of step in with a small step like this in this world was like, oh my God, is it real? And so it's just me, obviously. And it's, this movie is unique and it's hard, it would be hard to compare to any other Disney movie. It just has that unique, you know, tone and vibe. So yeah, it's probably something I shouldn't have put on myself. Yes.
Well, we're getting into Christmas season. We are 15 days away. Do you have some Christmas favorites, whether that's known for the music or not? What are some of your favorites and what are you most excited to show your daughter once she gets to a certain age?
That's a good question. Christmas. You know, the only thing that I could think of that I think we should wait a little bit before I show to her is The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because that's probably anything that now comes to my mind when you're mentioning Christmas that I really love. It's like Nightmare Before Christmas. I love so much that movie.
Okay.
And so, but you know, my daughter is 3 years old, so we're going to wait a little bit more.
Yeah, you've got time. You've got.
Yeah,
time.
Yeah, but that's something I'm looking for to show it to her. And actually, she's we just passed Halloween, and we have so much, we have a hard time trying to stop watching those Halloween TV kids shows that she's keeping watching over and over. And she was trying to switch to Christmas, but she's loving Halloween, which is good, I think.
Well, I kind of have a similar story. When my daughter was still in a high chair, we used to watch the Sesame Street Halloween episodes. And so that we would, you know, 6 months later, we would still find our way singing these Halloween songs or sequences from the Halloween. So you're not
in
alone.
In the spring.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, well, you know the feeling. But you know, this year was a great year. I mean, I've been fortunate to be able to have this release on Disney, and it's a great year. I'm so glad.
That's excellent. Well, congratulations, and as we head into 2021, can you give us one or two projects that are going to keep you busy and you're excited to talk about?
So I can, there is some project I cannot talk about right now, but there is like a French, there's two French features that I'm working on right now. One is the adaptation of there is a trilogy in France of books that are adapted to movies. The first one got a lot of attention because it got like at least 5 Césars, which is the French Academy Award. So that's the sequel that I'm working on right now. And the other one is a very famous French director that does a lot of that has very dark humor, and which is a great director to work with, as I'm a big fan of his work before we were working together. So I would just put aside the fact that I'm doing the music. I'm just enjoying being with the guy. You know, he's such a funny guy. You know, the pitch, I mean, there is he's the only one who does that kind of very, very dark humor in France. And it's such it's so funny. So I'm really happy with those two projects, and I can't wait to share them.
Okay, well, we will look forward to them as are the rest of your endeavors. But Guillaume, it's been a pleasure. My best to you and the family into 2021, and we'll catch you soon.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark, and I wish you the same. And I hope to talk to you soon.
It.
Have a good one. Thank you.